His lecture, well organized like Professor Mathias would do it in a classroom, you're going to be disappointed. I'm not a seminary professor, and I don't know what to do about teaching at a seminary level. Nor am I here to teach much of anything anyway. I'd like to tell you about what I think a parish pastor ought to be doing in his community. And mostly it'll be reminiscing from my own experiences, because it seems that what I did in that little town in Michigan turned out all right. At least I don't care about great honors either, but having a library named after you seems to impress a lot of people. I always say at least I can prove that they didn't ride me out of town on a rail at the end. And I was there for 29 years, as was indicated before. I got there in 1944 from a little parish up in northern Michigan near Roger City, Belknap, of which no one ever heard. That was a farming community. And we were out in the country by about 7 miles from Roger City. At that time, I was the pastor of the church and also the teacher in the school. And I took care of that for 10 years until the call came from Fraser, and the president of the district advised me that I should go there. I should wake the thing up, he said, because it hadn't been doing much. Fact of the matter is that it went from 525 communicants in 1924 to 250 when I saw it in 44. So what to do? Evidently, we had to get involved in something other than what had been going on. My predecessor claimed that when the church bells rang on Sunday, that was an evangelism program. And the church had been built in 1882, and it is a landmark today yet in the city, right in the middle. Fraser isn't big. It's 4 square miles, 1 mile in each direction from the church, northeast, west, and south. So what to do? Look at the community and then start doing something with it. My first day in town was spent waiting for furniture to come, and I found out who the mayor was, and I trundled myself over there, introduced myself, and he asked me what it was I wanted, and I said nothing. And I think that's an important point. You meet these fellows first, and you don't have an axe to grind, so go to them before the axe is there. So I had a good chat with him and told him who I was, and what I was after was to build this congregation in his city. He agreed that that was a noble thing to do, and he wished me success. And then we settled down to go to work. The idea nowadays is to equip the saints for work, which is a fine thing. However, you've got to have the right kind of saint in the first place before you can start doing much with it. And those people there had all belonged to the church 100 years, I guess. So when you talked about equipping them to go out and find new members, then you had a job to do. In fact, one lady told me some years later, after we had a lot of new people, es ist gar nicht mehr schön in unsere Kirche, da kennt man die Hälfte nicht mehr, which translated means it isn't so nice in our church anymore because you don't know half the membership. They resented these people coming. In fact, we lost some people after we had persuaded them to come, because when they got there, they were looked up and down from top to bottom and back up as though to say, what in the world are you doing here? Who let you in? But we stayed with it. Canvassing over and over again in neighborhoods. We got our young people out to do some pre-canvas work. And then the preacher sat there with a stack of cards about that thick. And now trying to equip the saints to follow up on these cards wasn't too successful a venture. So I had to take what I thought were good prospects for the evangelism people by the hand and take them along on calls, which I did faithfully. We made thousands of these calls, and it paid off because we had then adult instruction classes, information classes, we called them, and so the church was built. In 29 years, we managed to confirm about 800 people as adults. So with the internal growth and the external growth, it wasn't too difficult. Then to get involved more in the community, we did a few things. Number one, I joined the Chamber of Commerce, and this was necessary because this was still pre-war days. I got there in 1937 or 44, and the war was still in it at its height, and people were running around looking for a place in the sun, of course. And when you know the Chamber of Commerce people, you know those who are most interested in the growth of the community, also the industrialists and the manufacturers. I never did look for a job for one of my parishioners, but I found it. And that's because I had these connections with these guys. Also, I went to the city council meetings and looked in on those once in a while, which is pretty good too, because sooner or later you may want something from the city council, and if you are friends of theirs, you're likely to get it much better than if you aren't. And then I went to the Board of Education meetings. In fact, I volunteered to be on the Advisory Council for Education in our community, and the superintendent of the school system, the principal of the high school, and I became good friends. They could beat the socks off of me in golf, which they enjoyed thoroughly. I never did catch up with those fellows. And then there came the time when the city of Roseville wanted to take on and make us part of their city. We would have been at the extreme north end, and that didn't look like a likely place to get anything done, because the residents of Roseville would see to it that their streets were in order and everything taken care of, and we would sit there begging for a few crumbs to fall from the master's table. So it was decided among a bunch of the leading citizens in our town that we ought to incorporate as a city, which we proceeded to do. For one thing, they needed a charter, and they held an election to elect a charter commission. I was one of those elected. And then the Charter Commission met, and I became its chairman. I had fun with that, too. I learned how a city operates and what is necessary in order to make it operate. So that's involvement in the community. We had our parking lots plowed free of snow in the winter because we had an in with the mayor and his Department of Public Works. Fact of the matter is, I installed the first mayor of the city into his office. It also helped that he was a parishioner of mine. But you've got to know people, and you've got to live with them. I also became the chaplain of the fire department and the police department. And that was fun, too. I always remember one night when they had a lady that they had the police had picked up on the street. She was in her night clothes, robe and all, not exposing anything, you understand. But they brought her to the house, and since I was the chaplain, what do we do with her now? So I sat down and talked to her for a while. Her husband had a few shotguns and rifles and stuff around. He was going to shoot her. So she escaped through the back door while he was looking out the front, I guess. But the police and I went over there. We got his armaments away from him. And I wish I could say that we were successful in making a good Christian out of him. But about 2 weeks later, he blew his brains out. So I struck out with a mighty swish on that one. Then the fire department, there too, you had people who lost their homes, and someone had to talk to them one way or the other to comfort them in their troubles and to help them with insurance and things. And I did my licks there too. It was great. Then the city wanted a library and should have had one long before me. But we had an old school that was built in 1882 that we weren't using anymore because it was much too small for us. By that time, we had some 250 children in school and 8 or 9 teachers. So we offered the city that building as the beginning of a library. And they took it and revamped it a little to suit themselves. They rented it from us leased it at $1 a year. Now they added on to it $500,000. And they named it after me because I was instrumental in helping them to get it in the first place. Then there was no public transportation in our town. And this business of hauling my wife to the nearest store got to hang out. So I went after a bus company to come in and service our community. And that helped too. A lot of other guys had the same idea, only they hadn't done much about it. Then service clubs. We had none. And I thought we should, so we fooled around with the Rotary and the Kiwanis, finally ended up with Kiwanis, which is a fine organization, I guess. So are all the others. And here, too, you get credit for doing something that you think ought to be done. In fact, the whole business, whatever I did in my parish ministry, was never designed to see what I could gain out of it in the end, but what could the church benefit from the doing of it. If you live in your community and live with your people and know them, you have all kinds of experiences. And I think for a pastor of a church to be successful and his congregation to make progress, it is necessary that the community know that the thing is there and that the preacher is a pretty good fellow, even if he has a reputation for being bullheaded and blockheaded and one thing and another. I remember a couple of drunks arguing one night while they were in their cups. One was trying to tell the other his large troubles, and he should advise him. And he says, don't look at me. You go over by that SOB at St. John's. He'll tell you what to do. You may not like what you hear, but you're going to hear it. So that's another part of the reputation a man picks up over the years. All in all, the parish ministry is the thing, not officialdom, men. I know there's got to be a president and maybe a few vice presidents, but they are necessary and not the thing that really counts. The parish ministry is the place where things happen, not officialdom. I was much happier in a parish than I ever was outside of it, because there is really a place where you can do some good. So when you then get your first calls, they'll probably be in parishes that are not very large, and that is good too. You've got to get your horn sawed off first before you can do anything else. And that's the place to learn. Already, of course, the vicarage does part of it, but really it isn't the real thing, because there you have another man who is the pastor of the group, and you are kind of his associate or assistant to help him. But when you're on your own, then you come face to face with the facts of life. The parish experience is great. It's wonderful. People love you. They respect you because they know that you are to be a man of God. And some of the respect they have for the Lord kind of transfers itself to the man who represents him most closely in the community. There was a time when the preacher was perhaps one of the most educated men in the community. This is not true anymore. There are others who are also educated, and you have to look out for them. I never did like the PhD who at 25 had gotten his degree, because if he was a PhD in chemistry, he decided that he now knew everything there was to know about theology as well. And those were the people that griped me the most. However, you have to work with them too without showing that you don't like them particularly. Another good piece of advice for free is work with children. Those little guys are the best missionaries in the world. They haven't yet developed the inhibitions which adheres to older people. They are willing to invite their friends and playmates to the Sunday school, and vacation Bible school is another one of those things. My predecessor said the vacation Bible school was for the birds, and therefore there wasn't any. So we got started in organizing. We had school buses that we used for transportation of our day school children, and we put large signs on the outside of them, bull horns to give the message, and I did most of the bullying. And there was a year when we had 700 of them for vacation Bible school. Before we were finished, we had a couple of tents in which we operated, and I stuck an Indian teepee, or whatever they call those things, on the church lawn. And the trustee says, "Who authorized that?" I says, "Doggone if I know." But it was a real conversation piece. A little later, we put up a sign advertising our vacation Bible school. We got rooked a little bit because some of the ruffians in town decided to cut slashes into our teepee. So we had to pay for the fool thing out of our own pocket because no one had authorized it. But 700 children, I tell you, that's fun. But then you roll up your sleeves and you sing with them and play with them. And then when you knock on the door and the little guy says, "Oh, Pastor, come on in. The old man can't throw you out. You've been invited in." And that's a good point in your favor. You do everything that makes sense, provided it's done with dignity, I guess, of which I don't possess too much. You fellas all have more than that, I know. But work with it. Work at it. This, I think, is how a pastor works in the community. And if he's accepted, then the church is accepted. And I think that all helps towards making it an instrument in the hands of God for growth and for education of people towards Christianity. The gospel, of course, is still the message which is the message of salvation. So you prepare your sermons and you practice your preaching. And then when you invite people and are successful in getting them to come, they won't go home and say, that Bert can't preach worth a darn. They won't say that if you know what you're doing. And the gospel will have its effect on the hearts of men, and the Holy Spirit works through it. I'm persuaded of that more and more as I watch things go. What am I doing now? Fiddling with a colloquy program mainly. Are there colloquy students in this group? Good. Then you have probably seen letters written by me. And there are 130 of you men between the two seminaries enrolled this fall, and about 70 more in the process. Takes a little while, as you will recall, to get everything together and get started. So as time goes on, probably in the next couple of quarters, there will be a few more added to your number. We hope so. We are kind of proud of our graduates of Kohlmeyer College, I call it, because Mrs. Kohlmeyer, my secretary, does a lot of the corresponding for me. She knows more about the program than I do because she lives with it day by day, and she's familiar with the names. But that's my main job these days, to get that program straightened around. And when you have 200 files to look at, that's quite a bunch. Not as bad as 771 or whatever it is. 671 are there now here? We thank the Lord for that. I was here when there were, what, 93? Back in 1974. We know all about how that thing went because we lived through it. I'm still a member of the Board of Control here by appointment of Dr. Preuss as his representative. And we get out here quite often, as you probably know, for meetings of various kinds, graduation exercises and the like. And I keep this curly-haired haircut like Dr. Mathias, because people recognize that. Whenever I go somewhere and somebody offers to meet me, they don't have to ask around for me, because my secretary tells them, look for somebody with a crew cut, and that'll be he. And there are very few of us. So we get by with that. Well, we certainly wish all of you God's richest blessings in your studies, and don't let anything get in your way. Do it. It's worth it. In the end, you thank the Lord for the days you spent here, even though it made you look in the book too much, according to what you're thinking now. And you've got a beautiful library in which to work, and that you won't always have either. You'll be thrown on your own resources. I hope that you can persuade the librarian in your town to get some books for his library or her library, which you are able to use later on for yourself. I've always intended to do that and did it too. There are books in that library they named after me, which nobody in town uses except a few preachers. And I had to goose the Methodists and Baptists to go and take those books out once in a while so they don't throw them in the ash can as those that aren't being used. So go to it, and may the Lord bless every effort you make in the work of his kingdom. Thanks.
We still got about 10 minutes or so. Are there anybody that have any questions involving either community involvement or anything that Dr. Weber had talked on that you would like to address to him? Jock.
Yes, Dr. Weber.
I don't think there is any stigma involved to be for life, unless you get nasty about it. I think a pastor has a right to express his opinion just like everybody else does. And I don't think that's going to hamper any. If you do it decently and honorably, I think the community will listen if you have, by this time, sold yourself to them. I never fiddled with politics directly. That, I think, is where you can equip the saints the best. That's something they know something about. We always had somebody on the city council from our church. And I, of course, supported my own members as they ran for office. Told the community, I think they're honest and upright and would be a good addition. The newspaper people I forgot to talk about. Gotta learn to know them too. If they like you, they write nice articles. If they don't like you, you get roasted. So be sure you get them to like you. As you must know, there is a lot to being the pastor of a parish. And not all of them are in cities. But out in the country, too, that's where I started. In northern Michigan, we had a township. And I got one of my members elected the supervisor. So we had access to what went on in the township there, too. I never belonged to one of those preacher things. What do they call them?
Pastoral
Alliance or whatever. I never bothered with that. And, of course, if you're successful, there are going to be those, especially those who are standing still, who will criticize. But that doesn't mean anything. You're there to see that your parish does the right thing. And whatever they want to do is their problem.
Would you recommend that as future pastors we get involved in the community material writing, or would you recommend abstaining from those types of organizations?
Well, I'm not great on unionism. Never was. And I don't think you have to have a joint Thanksgiving service with Methodists, Baptists, and what have you in order to be part of the community. I had a fellow who proposed this. He was from the Church of Christ. And he thought that we should have a joint Thanksgiving service. And I say, good, come on over. I'd keep my mouth shut. People are able to cope with that thing themselves much better than I can. Not that we're against education. However, taxes, I think, are individual things to decide, not the church to mess into. Best thing to do is to get to the superintendent ahead of time and tell him to forget his wild notions about taxation and get down to brass tacks. That's why I served on an advisory council on education in my town. And we headed this business off. I told him, you get all these taxes around and the people won't have any money left for the Lord. And after we got all through, we had two of his children enrolled in our day school. So we sold the job pretty well. About 1,100. Yes, the only Lutheran one. It's still the only Lutheran church. There's one started a little north of us, out in one of the subdivisions, but he went broke. He had come and suggested that I should give him 150 members to get started. And I told him, I'll show you how to do it. Then you go ahead and do it, but he never did it. People are not going to dishonor you for taking a firm stand doctrinally. Never. They'll respect what you stand for. In fact, I had hundreds of people tell me in our adult information classes, good, I found a church that stands for something finally. I belonged to the Methodist Church all my life and never learned anything. Now here is somebody who knows what he's talking about, knows what he believes, and is able to articulate. So you're going to be honored for taking your stand on the scriptures and the confessions. Felt I had to. That's part of the business. Besides, I wanted to get to know those people so that I could be of service to them later. It's a terrific experience. Only don't get too big a class. I had one of 45 once, and I vowed I'd never do that again. We started after Labor Day and finished at Easter time. Too much discussion, which is all good. However, it's time consuming. And we had about every religion in the world represented there, I guess, including some real loud talkers on Jehovah's Witnesses. So you had to explain. And take things away from them, little by little. But 10, 15 people at a time is pretty good. In fact, we all sometimes taught two or three at a time. I remember one class that had three people in it. Two were from Stroh's Brewery and one from Goble in Detroit. That was a real joy to be with that smaller group where you could really talk intimately together. Thanks for letting me in.